Welcome to this week's edition of Interviews with Entrepreneurs with me, Monique Chambers, here on Campus FM. Each week, I'll be discussing different issues and different ideas with entrepreneurs from Malta and overseas to help you change or start your own business. So this week I'm talking to Ben Greck, and you're the co-founder of something called uniplaces.com.
That's right, yeah.
So tell us a bit about uniplaces.com. What is it?
So uniplaces, probably the easiest way to explain it, is like an Airbnb, but for mid-long-term accommodation. So
okay.
Instead of booking 5 nights of accommodation for your holiday,
mm-hmm.
you're booking 6 months or 12 months of accommodation for your studies.
Okay.
And typically that's students moving to another city, whether it's in their own country, moving from, say, in the UK, say, London to Manchester, or it's someone studying abroad, moving from, say, Germany to Spain to do an Erasmus program or something like that.
Does it work for people like doing internships, so they might just have a 3 or 4 month and then they can find a place like that as well?
Yeah, exactly. So we actually have quite now a broad range of people that book accommodation on UniPlaces. It's not just your full-time students.
Okay.
It's your Erasmus students. It's your summer language students. It's your even some teachers and professors doing secondments at different universities.
Okay.
Actually using the website. And in recent months and years, we've actually been getting more and more expats actually relocating for work. So it's actually broadened out. The site is not just exclusively for students, although some accommodation is only for the student audience.
Okay. And so how did you come up with the idea?
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting question. I always say that UniPlaces was a very team-first business,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that, like, what does that mean? We didn't really have an idea when we started. It was more that we were three guys, met at university, had similar ambitions to start a company.
Mm-hmm.
We actually all went separate ways after university. I went to work in finance. One of my co-founders did a master's, and the other one actually went to work at Groupon.
Okay.
In China. And we basically then all decided it was time, we quit our jobs, got together and started working.
Okay.
And actually we didn't really have the idea when we started. And I think it can be a bit of a misconception in entrepreneurship in general, because everyone sort of thinks that they have to wait for that genius idea. And I think it's really not so much about that. I think it's much more about uncovering an opportunity where you see an underserved market niche,
mm-hmm.
or actually, you know, just getting a team together and working and figuring out from customer feedback and testing and things like that, what is the thing that you should build.
Yeah.
It's rare that someone just has a genius idea. They do exactly that, and that exact thing is the thing that makes them a billion or a million or whatever it is, you know. So UniPlaces was very much the team first getting together, working on a few different ideas actually,
mm-hmm.
and then this is the one that actually ended up getting traction.
The strongest of the three. So now UniPlaces is used in multiple countries. It's not just by students coming to the UK, for example, or going to the UK.
Yeah.
It's also, you have students going to other universities in other countries.
That's right, yeah. So from the student side, we've actually had students from every single country worldwide booking on UniPlaces.
Wow.
And on the landlord side, on the supply side, as we call it, we've got properties all across Europe.
Okay.
So in the UK, France, Germany, Portugal, Spain, Italy, everywhere.
Cool.
But they're our main markets.
So how many people now run UniPlaces.com? It can't just be the three of you.
No. It's grown significantly since then, and actually we're about 100 people now.
Yeah. Okay. And are they all based in the UK, for example? Because that's where you all sort of started. Is that where it is? Or?
Yeah, we're a UK company.
Mm-hmm.
We have a big operational office in Lisbon in Portugal.
Ah, startup heaven, apparently.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, now it is.
Ah.
I mean, when we started out there in 2012, it was really just recovering from the financial crisis. And Portugal was a place that got hit really hard. One of my co-founders is Portuguese, and so we spent some time out there,
uh-huh.
in the early phases when we were just figuring out what exactly it was that we were going to do, obviously because it was cheaper than being in London. And we really grew up there, the team, and mm-hmm. it's a great place to hire engineers, it's a great place to hire customer service teams, lots of multilingual people over there. So we ended up building a lot of our operations out there.
And the timeline is the same as
exactly the same
UK.
As the UK.
So you Perfect, forget yeah. that, but actually that would be a huge benefit for you as well.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. And what about growing, you know, from 3 guys to 100 guys? How do you do that? Because, you know, you might be good at one thing, but hiring people is a whole new ball game.
Yeah.
Do you know them at a point in time you had to hire somebody to do your HR, or did you just keep doing it yourselves?
It's interesting, actually. When I look back at that experience of scaling, the two people that I would have hired sooner is a head of HR mm-hmm. and actually a PA.
Ah, okay.
because in the early stage, you are literally doing everything, mm-hmm. okay? There's nothing, like, if there's no one allocated to do a particular task, it comes to you. So whether that's like cleaning up, literally setting up desks, you know, sorting out people's contracts, you have to be an absolute jack of all trades, right? And you slowly start building the team and filling mm-hmm. in these positions. So that was definitely an interesting experience. But until we were about 30 or 40 people, we didn't really have anyone looking after HR.
Okay.
So we were very lucky to have a lot of, you know, enthusiastic people, you know, bright people that were willing to kind of come in for the ride, and entrepreneurial people, right? And just start working, you know, even if we hadn't quite figured out their contract yet or this or that, you know, it was a bit of a mess. But that is a startup reality, you know.
Yeah, it's not for 9-to-5ers who want this basic package and want to be able to leave on time and
that's right.
all of that stuff. It's a different world. It's a whole different job.
It is a different world, and it's more like a mission, you know. It's more like, I don't know, if you're an athlete and you're training every day because mm-hmm. you want to, it's more like that sort of thing than a 9-to-5.
You've got to do anything that's required.
Exactly.
I've spoken to someone recently who now have a massive company, and he was like, yeah, I just remember having to unblock the toilets. And I just thought, oh, and that sort of humbles him still today. He remembers, you know, those days, so he doesn't sort of think, because I'm swanning around in my fancy car now.
Exactly.
Everything was always like that. It does take time to get to that stage.
Exactly.
Now, you guys, you'd also done quite well on the funding, because funding's another thing, because obviously people start with bootstrapping, funding their own way, you know, beg, borrow, steal, families, whatever.
Yeah.
But then you went out and you did it the pro way. You went out and did proper funding.
That's right, yeah.
What kind of experience did you get from that? Because I'm guessing the first person didn't just say, oh yeah, here you go.
No.
How does that work?
So funding is always an interesting one. I mean, my personal background, I studied finance at university and then mm-hmm. went into private equity in London.
Okay.
So I had a bit of exposure to mm-hmm. the funding process. And between the three of us, the way it works when you're just a young team is you know, the work just falls on whoever's naturally more inclined to do that bit of work. So, for example, one of my co-founders was very much a people person, and he was very good at hiring and, you know, identifying people for cultural fit and things like this. So he did a lot of that stuff. My other co-founder was very sort of operations and like getting things set up, you know, customer service, this, that, the other. So he was doing a lot of that stuff. And because of my experience, the financing stuff fell on my lap. So I was like, okay, so let's figure this out now. In the first instance, what I remember, you know, so I should say that we funded the business for the first year, really, out of our own mm-hmm. pocket and the little savings that we had, which was a bit scary, you know, because, you know, you're spending money, you're trying to live yourself on as little cost base as possible. And then when you hire people, you're paying their salary out of your own pocket, and, you know, your money's going down very quickly. So we had to raise what's called a seed round first.
Okay.
You know, that's typically at the stage where there's a team, there's an idea, there might be a very basic initial product, mm-hmm. but there's not really much traction and there needs to be more validation and so on. So it's a very high risk moment in time for the investor to
But it's
to come
a maker or breaker for you. So
absolutely.
Is-
for the company, it's a maker or breaker. And for the investor, it can be very lucrative if they get it right, because mm-hmm. they get a very high percentage relative to the money that they're putting in. So I remember going out and doing a number of things that helped us raise the initial round. Mm-hmm. One of them was networking mm-hmm. and speaking to literally anyone I could to introduce me to anyone that they thought might be a relevant investor for us, someone uh-huh. that's been in the industry, real estate, you know, online marketplace models, these sorts of things. going out and doing business plan competitions, pitch competitions, whatever we could. And we actually got quite lucky out of that. We won a few of those competitions and won, I think, about, all in all, about 100k through grants and prizes and things like this.
And so that was all in the UK you did those, or did you do some
Portugal, UK, yeah, anywhere really. Chile.
We
did the startup Chile program. So we sent Mariano, my co-founder, to Chile for 6 months because they're willing to give us a 40k grant to go out there and work in Chile for a while. So yeah, you literally do anything, you know. And that's the fun of it as well, I think.
Do you think the benefit of that was, and I'm assuming all young single guys at the time, so you were able to just drop and go? Or did it take your families with you? Because this is, you have to believe, your partner has to believe in you as well.
Yeah, exactly.
They have to go with it and live that way as well. It's not just you living that way. Your partner has to take the gamble with you.
Yeah. I think you do have an advantage as a young single person. I think, you know, equally guys or girls.
Yes, of course.
It does help to be not, you know, not have too many ties and mortgage or family and things like that. But I think later in life you can also work it out. You know, you just have to be aligned with your partner that this is going to be a bit of a crazy moment, you know, and you just have to organize it differently, I think.
Stick with me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, even still, it's, you know, it's challenging even when we were that age to have relationships and so on. So anyway, so that's what we did. And then through various pitch competitions and networking, we found some investors that were interested. And then we went through more of a formal process with them of presenting our, usually you put together what's called a deck or a presentation, basically, about
this
your
company. This is your sort of your slides and your whatever.
Yeah,
your
10 slides, high level, like this is what we're doing, this is the vision, get people excited about what you're doing. You have your financial pack and everything like that, and you can go into the details. And so we went through that process with an investment fund from Portugal and actually some private investors from the UK as well. And I think we were very lucky through our network to meet some great initial investors. And in fact, the guys that invested us in us first were the founders of Love Film, which sold to Amazon. So Amazon Prime Video uses the technology now of Love Film, that Love Film built. So they sold for $200 million to Amazon. And then actually the founders of that went on to do lots of things, but one of them went on to build Zoopla in the UK, which is the biggest property portal in the UK, and just sold for $3 billion. So the founder of Zoopla, we were really lucky because it was a very relevant person to have. He was one of the first investors in UniPlaces, and that renders a lot of credibility to your business when you get people like that around you supporting it as well. And obviously his advice was invaluable as well.
And you obviously use not just the funds, but use the connections as well that he can give you. So using an investor is not just the money. It's like, is it using their advice, their network as well,
properly,
you know, not abusing it to be able to go forward and forward and forward.
Exactly.
So what stage are you at now with UniPlaces? Is it now just it runs with these 100 people? Do you still have to fly between the offices itself, or
Well, so I did that for a while. So we scaled up the business, and I remember the different milestones of, you know, when the company really felt like it changed a lot. So initially, you know, it was the three of us, then it was about 7 of us, and that was kind of felt like a milestone, and then it was 30 of us,
Christmas party time.
Exactly. And then it was 100 of us, you know, and like you know, they were the times that kind of 7, 30, 100, that's when you feel that the organization changes, because there's so many people. And when it was, you know, scaling up, I was living in Portugal, I was living in London, I was flying between the two, I did all of that. There was a point that I was literally, my schedule was week in London, week in Lisbon, week in London, week in Lisbon, basically like that. Which does get tiring.
Cake, curry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you get the benefits of
that. Yes.
And then actually recently in 2018, we've been, you know, putting together a more sort of senior structured management team and organizing the company and going through all these sort of next stages. And we actually decided to also bring in a professional CEO that's kind of scaled the business from where we are now to the next step, which is even bigger. And so now I'm in a non-executive capacity on the board, so I don't have to do so much traveling anymore. But
how old are you?
31.
Okay. Made me feel very small, very unachieved.
No. It's I was, we were a combination of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears, and a lot of luck as well on the way.
But fantastic idea.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you mustn't degrade that, it's a fantastic idea as well. And the fact it's being used by so many young people around the world and all sorts of people around the world now.
Yeah.
So if you've just joined us, you're listening to me, Monique Chambers, with Ben Greck, who's the co-founder of uniplaces.com. So we just talked about raising lots of funding, and now you're sort of taking a bit of a backseat, you know, just chairing. What lessons would you pass on to somebody or a bunch of people who were getting to this stage now? What's the most important things you've picked up having a startup from a nothing to now, you know, a worldwide platform?
Yeah, that's a really tough question, because there's just, you know, if I look back, and I've recently had a bit more time to kind of reflect on the whole experience, and it's just, you learn so much that it's really dependent on, to give good advice, where that company is in their journey at the moment, where those people are in their journey. But I think, you know, for people that maybe have an ambition to start a company but haven't really done it yet, I would say, you know, don't wait. It's not about the idea, it's about just kind of getting stuck in, committing to it, and working on it, and getting feedback from customers, and evolving and iterating the idea and the business, because there's very, very few businesses that start as something and then grow and basically don't change. Most businesses change a lot, you know, from when they're an idea and starting out to when they're a big success. A lot. I mean, Amazon started off selling books online. Now they do data-based services for most, you know, companies.
That's the biggest
world.
Part of their business.
Completely different. You know, just look at Apple, Microsoft, every all the big successes. They've changed a huge amount. And I think, to be honest, you can't build a big business if you only stay focused on one thing.
Even Coca-Cola doesn't just make Coca-Cola.
Exactly. I mean, Coca-Cola bought Innocent. They're doing all sorts of things now. You know, so really, just it's like, if you have a passion to do it and an ambition to do it, then do it. And I know that sounds really scary, but it's more about taking that step than anything. And I always say to people, the difference between an entrepreneur and someone you wouldn't call an entrepreneur is literally taking the risk. It's like, if you're willing to take the risk, you're an entrepreneur, and that's it. It's as simple as that, because I've met so many different types of entrepreneurs, and they're all different backgrounds, you know, different skill sets, everything. So that's it. So just do it. Well, number one, don't wait. Get the people right and the culture right. When you're building a team, you really need to think about how you want to work together. What is the, how do you expect to work with each other? You know, do you expect, you know, you obviously want to like respect each other, work hard together, work as a team and not as like individuals. You know, all those things, just picking people that you kind of gel with at the beginning and that you resonate with, and you have shared values and a shared ambition, and you kind of want to go in the right way. That will save you a whole lot of time, because the biggest issues we had in the early stage were people issues, basically.
Is that because people aren't honest with themselves? They think they want to do this, but actually they're not willing to put in the 18-hour days, or that they're just not quite the right fit because, you know, they want to bring their dog to work. It's like, no, that's not going to happen in this office because he's allergic to fur. Whatever, you know, exactly, is it that sort of...
It's whatever, exactly. It's just when you have people that don't really want to go do the same thing. Like, one person wants to build a sort of lifestyle business, you know, and do a kind of, keep their kind of 9-to-5 routine, but the other one wants to build a global, you know, enterprise. Like, that's just not going to work. You know, that's especially with your founding team and your early team members. This is critical, right? Also, in terms of like the skill sets and the people that you put in the right roles, like if you've got someone maybe on the tech side, there are a lot of technical people that are very competent technically, but not necessarily good managers. So don't put them in the management position, you know, make sure. It is all about, you know, talking to people and being honest with each other. And sometimes that's the hardest thing to do, right? So get the people right, get the culture right, and set that early, right? And then that extends to investors and advisors that you're bringing around the business. Bring people, as you said earlier, that can help you go to the next level. And it's not, if you're raising money from someone, it's not just money. And make sure your investors share your ambition for the business, because otherwise they're going to say, oh, you know, take your foot off the gas a bit, because we don't see it going that way, and you're going to just want to keep going. And that can cause issues, you know. So you've got to think ahead a bit about the company that you want to build, and make sure that you get the right people around the table that share your vision and share your ambition for what you want to create.
What about on a personal level? Because obviously there's lots of things you have to sort of just do without. And so many people, when they're starting a business, they fuss about things like the office space.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they want to have the right color-coded paper clips or whatever it is.
Yeah,
and
business
like,
cards.
Yeah, guys, it's just not important. So did you find some of those things like, okay, we're just going to have to do without whatever that thing is, and just know we can't have pizza on a Friday, whatever it is, there's just something you have to. Was that hard on a personal level because you were funding everything, the three of you? It's guys, we're going to have to miss out on something, a new car, a holiday, whatever.
I think it was more like, we took that more on a personal level. I mean, we really put our cost base down, personal cost base down to like a minimum, which is kind of like, if you're working 24/7, it's not that hard anyway.
No time to spend it.
Yeah, you've got nothing really to do with it anyway. So like, I mean, but yeah, just keeping the personal cost base down to a minimum. Really, we were putting like every penny we could get into the business, and we did, you know, without a lot. But I think when you're starting, you need to find people that see the vision. They're excited to achieve that goal and that ambition, and they want to be in for the ride, and they kind of know that you're in a bad office now or whatever, but it's going to change very quickly and you're going to grow and you know, everything's going to change very quickly. And I think you just need the people that see that, and it's
stick with it.
You know, it's not about necessarily having a big risk appetite, but it's just having people that are more focused on the achieving the goal than focused on what could go wrong or what's not that good now, kind of thing. And I think that's the sort of people that they're the sort of people that you need to bring around early on, and that helps with all this stuff about like, sorry, we don't have a desk for you right now, but there's a really comfortable beanbag in the corner there that if you can just set up, or
I think
you
might have been to your office.
It's like, do you have a laptop that you could bring? Because we're not going to give you a laptop right now, you know. But there are people that will be like, what, that's crazy, or there were people that'd be like, yeah, sure, no problem, you know.
And how did you find people? Was it through your own networks, advertising? Did you use interns? How do you find those initial people, not the initial, very initial people, but the are from the three to the seven to the next stage up? Did you look to find people? Because that people struggle to find.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously that's also market driven. I think in Malta it can be challenging, right? In Portugal we were very fortunate because, you know, unfortunately there was the financial crisis, and there were lots of people that were, you know, thinking about finding a new job because they were concerned that their company was restructuring or this sort of thing, or people that had been made redundant actually. And the first engineer that we hired was, you know, 35-year-old engineer that's been working all his life in consulting firm that had basically just been made redundant. And you know, we were like, well, look, you're a great fit. I mean, you've got loads of experience and you can help us a lot, but you know, this is like, you know, this is just us right now, like this is our this is very risky for you. And in the end he was like cool with it, and he stayed with the company up until like 2017.
Okay.
And actually that was one of the things that really make you feel proud in the end. It's like having built something that, you know, you've really delivered on your promise to those people that came in early and kind of believed in you. Yeah.
And you know, you were saying about you know you start off, you have to do everything yourselves and you work long hours. Did you have to all have part-time jobs as well to continue funding, or was this like, no, this is what we're going to do?
Yeah,
we're full on dedicated to this role.
Yeah.
Or did you do other projects for other companies
because
you had this base without the product, sort of thing? How did you?
Yeah, no, it was very much the latter. Like we just committed to it.
Okay.
And for me, I think some people are very good at like juggling things and organizing, and I'm not good at that. I'm very much an all or nothing person. Okay. I'm either in it or I'm not, you know. And so it's really hard for me to do side projects. Like when I was at university, I was always trying to do, you know, businesses on the side and stuff, and some of them kind of were okay, but like nothing serious, you know. And so you realize, you know, if you want to do something serious, you're going to need a team, and you're going to need to commit to it 100%. And so we really took the decision. It was September 2011. We were like, we're all quitting our jobs and we're going to move somewhere together and focus on this. And we didn't look back, basically.
And so the other guys now are still all in the same position as you, because you said there's
they're
all sort of sitting back a bit because now you've got your the management team stepping in.
Yeah.
And so you still have strategic direction. You still have an input into your, because it's like having a baby, isn't it?
Yeah, there's that process. I mean, it's really like a life cycle, and it's really like having a child, because you know, you you're starting it, and it's like part of you when mm-hmm. you're starting it, and you feel very personally about everything, and when you get criticized you're like offended, you know, but that's obviously not the right way to react, you know, when it's in the early stages. And then it grows and it starts getting a life of its own as a mm-hmm. business, and you get the people that you bring in start building the culture and the sort of personality of the business, which is why it's important to hire the right people. And then, you know, you have to at some point let go, like when your kid becomes an adult and yeah. they've got their life of their own. It's very much like that, right? And if you don't let go, you can throttle the success of the business, you yep. know, or you can be something that's actually constraining the business mm-hmm. and holding it back. So it's really a whole life cycle that we went through, yeah.
And that's the thing about, again, continuing to be honest with yourself, even though, you know, I'd be walking around thinking I was the big I am, you know, I've started this business, look, I've got... But you have to realise, you know, 100 people is a whole nother ball game.
Yeah.
It's not having 20 people that you know all of their names, their birthdays, that, you know...
Exactly.
It's a whole different ball game, and you start to have issues and, you know,
yeah.
things with personnel that then...
You've got 100 people, you've got 30 million euros mm-hmm. of investor cash.
Yeah.
You know, you really got to make sure you're being responsible. And at that point, you're more of a steward,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just then trying to make sure that you're increasing what some people refer to as the value equation.
Okay.
You've got to make sure the business is creating value. And if you're in any way holding that back, you've got to get out of the way.
Yeah, it's recognizing that. So I'm guessing aged only 31 and now having, you know, just a part-time job, we're going to be hearing a lot more from you?
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe I'll be interviewing again, maybe on next year's series.
That would be great.
It's been fabulous talking to you. Ben Grek speaking to me, Monique Chambers. Thank you from uniplaces.com.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's Interviews with Entrepreneurs with me, Monique Chambers, here on Campus FM. I'd also like to thank Carmela Grek and Redent Abdillah for the production of this show. The show is aired every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. and repeated every Friday at 7:30 p.m.